Here's a gift falling down. My heart is a home for joy. Now I'm getting strong. It begins in me. My heart is a place for is a place for peace. My heart is a place for peace.
Let me invite you to just take a moment and take a few nice deep breaths. You can allow your eyes to close or just gaze downward in a soft focus, but take a moment to just allow the words of what we've been singing to sink in. And allow yourself to arrive. Maybe notice the sensation of breathing in and breathing out. Noticing that you're sitting in a chair with your feet on the floor, being supported by the chair, being held to the earth by gravity. So many of these things that we encounter moment to moment every day and yet aren't aware of. Just allow yourself to be conscious of them. And maybe allowing your awareness to turn inside as we've been singing about love, peace, joy being inside. Noticing what's present for you today. How is it with your heart? Is it quiet? Is it anxious? Is it scared? Is it excited? Just bringing a spirit of curiosity and compassion to your present moment experience. Can you allow that experience now to be held in the love that is here? You can feel free to welcome other sources of love in your life, loved ones, pets, animals, nature, whatever it is that supports you, just acknowledge that here and now. And then taking a moment and wishing yourself well. And wishing others here today that same wellness of love and of peace. And then gradually, gently taking a few more nice deep breaths, allowing your awareness to come back to your body, to the room and the people around you, the sights and the smells. And as you're ready, gently opening your eyes. Thank you, Gwen. It's exciting and a little nervous to be here, to be honest with you. But I'm so looking forward to just, again, being a part of this amazing, amazing community. And the story that, you know, has got me here is incredible. It's a script that only God, Spirit, love could write. And you'll be hearing more and more of that as time as time goes on. But central to my coming to Coeur d'Alene, central to my knowing about this opportunity, is my beloved partner, Lisa. And I wanted you to have an opportunity to meet Lisa today, to hear some of her beautiful heart and spirit. So Lisa, would you come up and just share a few words with us today? Would you welcome her with you?
This is hardly fair, because I think by the time I'm done, you'll know more about me than you probably know about James. But you did ask me to come up here and just share with you a little bit about myself and also about our relationship and how we met. So, to start off, I've lived here since I moved here in 1973 with my family. We lived on a ranch on 125 acres up on Mount Coeur d'Alene and raised cattle and horses and chickens, and I spent a ton of time out in nature, and I love nature very much. I have a 17-year-old son who's not here today because he's working. His name is Michael. You'll get a chance to meet him soon, I'm sure. He is my light and joy. Being a mother has been like my number one favorite job. I'm also a mother to my doggy daughter, Molly, who's 8 years old. She's Golden Doodle. I hope meet her as well. She is our little social outlet. I've also been an interior designer for 28 years here in North Idaho and Washington, throughout the Northwest, and have really enjoyed working with clients and in their homes and just bringing, you know, beauty and peace to their environments. I also have a Bachelor of Fine Art in three-dimensional art and an art installation. My religious upbringing is a little interesting in that I didn't have much of one. However, our family came from a background of Nazarenes, and my grandfather and my uncle are both pastors, so it's no wonder that I would find one myself eventually. I tell James quite often he reminds me very much of my Uncle Phil. But I did find spirituality in my early 20s, going to a world religions course. And it was there that I realized that love is in all ways and brought to us in all ways, and that that's how we find God, and that God is in every path that we have in love. And that has brought me here on and off throughout the years as well. I've visited Unity several times over the years, and my mom and I, who is also here today, Jerry, she and I have talked about coming on a regular basis for so many years, and so it's been a thought to come here and be part of this congregation, and so it's fun that I'm here now, and it feels very synchronistic. A few years ago, I had the opportunity, like we all did, to take a big break during COVID and kind of look back on my life over 25 years of doing interior design work and art and being here and part of nature and all the things that I love. And I realized that the most important thing to me is to help create sacred space, and not just in people's homes, but within ourselves, within myself, and within our relationships with one another, and just within our community and whole. So live and love became one of my mottos that I use and say quite often. You might even spot it on my license plate. So it was no surprise when we started coming here, when James and I started coming, and I heard live, love, and uplift lives. That just pretty much says live and love, doesn't it? I mean, that was what I was talking about when I put it on my license plate, because I felt like it's so important for us to think about how precious life is, and if we can live it walking in love and holding sacred space for one another, that felt like that's just the most important thing to me. Which brings us to today, and I wanted to share just a little bit about James and I and how we met and some of the conversations that we had when we first met. We met online, believe it or not. We are one of those couples that you can say, hey, I know somebody that met online, and it actually worked out great. when we first sat down together for the first time, we had a conversation, of course, about like who we are and where we've been and what gifts we wanted to bring to the world. And you know, those lofty conversations you have when you're first falling in love, those are the conversations we had. And we looked at each other and we said, boy, I want that too. And we knew then, I think, in that moment, that we were probably destined to walk our paths together. We talked about the holiness of coming together and in the sacred space and time. And we asked each other, how good can it get? How good can we stand it? And we would always respond, we still do, I don't know, but I'm willing to find out. And all of this was taking place during the unfolding of just all sorts of transitions in both of our families. Facing loss and challenges and grief, and finding ourselves here with each other, here, right here with each other, and with all of you. And I'm just looking so forward to getting to know everybody. I think just that opportunity to just connect with each and every one of you, I'm feeling honored to be able to do that. I'm feeling honored to be here next to James and be part of this community. And I'm excited about everything that we get to do together and how we're going to uplift lives and live love. So I think we're gonna have a lot of fun.
Oh, thank you, honey. You say some of those things better than I ever could, and so I'm just so grateful for that. But so what I wanted to do in these first series of messages, well, let me just back up and just tell you kind of logistically how things are going to work out here. The board has been very gracious with me in determining like a time to actually start full-time as the minister here, and is it just so you all know that date is going to be October 1st. It was originally supposed to be this last Monday, but for reasons I trust you'll understand here in just a moment, there's some things I need to prioritize with my family over the course of this next month, and so this is going to allow the spaciousness to do that. I have to tell you, there's a younger version of me that says, oh yeah, just dive right in and get going, and let's, you know, on paper these things look great. But emotionally, with integrity, to be able to give oneself fully to a community and to a team and whatever, I needed some more space, and I just really want to thank the board for working with me in all of that. So, but I'll be speaking here this Sunday, next Sunday, the Sunday after that, the 14th, I won't be here, but then we'll be back the 21st and the 28th, and off we go. And in these first series of messages, as Lisa's alluded to, and as you've heard from me say, I want to really just lean into that mission and purpose of living love and uplifting lives, and looking at that mission through a number of different portals or vantage points, lenses. And so the first one that came to my mind is the one that's for today, living love. Or finding love in loss. And I got to be honest with you, as I was preparing this, I thought, who came up with this topic? Oh yeah, I did. Because it could be so, you know, so dark and so heavy and depressing. And I don't mean for it or intend it to be something, you know, in the middle of summer in a beautiful place like this. Let's talk about loss. And yet that's what's been very present for me. And I just want to share that as I talk about what loss is meaning to me lately, I just want to invite all of us to remember that as we go through life, we do experience loss in various ways. It could be the loss of a relationship, a breakup or death of a loved one, loss of a beloved animal. It could be loss as it relates to a career or vocation, a job. It could be financial loss, an unexpected bill or expenditure or outflow or loss of income. Anyway, that experience is there. It could be in the form of health, you know, a diagnosis that comes that is experienced as a sense of loss and you know, losing something that was had before and now something is going to happen. So it comes to us in many ways. I'm curious, are there any other ways that we experience loss or that you've experienced loss in your life? Yes, sir.
Self-doubt.
Mm-hmm. Loss of self-confidence. Loss of sight.
Loss of a dream.
Loss of a dream. Uh-huh.
Hearing.
Loss of hearing. Sure.
Being scalped.
Mm-hmm. Yeah? Any others?
Friendship.
Friendship. Loss of friendship. Yeah. Any others?
Loss of what we love about where we live.
Loss of what?
Loss of home.
Experience
of what we love of where we live. That's present for me.
Yes. Loss of home and where we live. Yeah, that changes. As I've gotten to know this community here in Coeur d'Alene, I know it's gone through a lot of changes. And, you know, even people asking me, you know, what are you going to do? Are you going to be here and whatever? And I just want you to know I am looking forward to becoming an Idaho resident, to getting an Idaho license plate on my car. And no, I'm not intending to turn this place into Seattle or whatever. I mean, I couldn't if I tried. But, you know, I will be me. I promise you that. And I invite you to be yourself. But one of the things that the point of this is that one of the things I appreciate, especially from getting to know Lisa and her friends who've lived here all their lives, is the deep sense of love that this community has for what it's been. And a hope to, that as we think about that and we think about this church that's been around for many, many years as a community, an expression of love, that we can lean hard into that value, lean hard into those things that have brought us here, and really anchor ourselves in that, because that becomes our anchor in the sea of change, you know, and when loss comes into our lives through whatever portal that it visits us, it can be very disorienting. It can be very disillusioning. It can be unsettling of sorts. And so just to share a little bit about how death has been showing up in my life, this is a picture of me with my 82-year-old father 2 days before he died. He passed away on August 18th of this year from complications from a couple of surgeries that he had. He had spent 11 days on a ventilator, and the doctors were telling us that he had probably a 5% chance of surviving. And so on a Thursday morning, my three brothers and stepmother and I gathered outside of his room and, you know, kind of looked each other in the eye and said, hey, are we prepared for, you know, what could very much happen here? And yes, through a very difficult time, we did. And pulled a tube out of his, pulled him off the ventilator, and he just popped back to life. And so then we shifted from saying goodbye to saying hello to a new version of him. And he gave us 3 days of being able to interact and talk and be himself and everything. And then on Monday morning, the 18th, we got a call from the hospital that he had passed quietly of a heart attack. And so that has been very present for me, and that's why I'm, you know, needing to be available to get back and forth to Seattle. His memorial is going to be on Monday, the 22nd of September in Tacoma, and it's just going to be, we're walking through that. But just two things I want to share with you about my dad and what I remember that are very important to me. And the first of all, it goes back to a memory that I think when I was 7 or 8 years old, I played boys basketball on a boys basketball team, and we weren't really good. our team was bad, and we had a wonderful coach who was just showed up every week and was faithful to teach us, and we had a lot of fun or whatever, and there was one day that he couldn't make it, and so my dad coached the team. And I was really nervous as a little boy, like, oh, no, I'm just kind of embarrassed, you know, and it's like dad shows up and whatever. And it's so funny because I just remember like it was yesterday. I can't remember anything that he said, but I can remember vividly how he made us feel. And he made us feel like we could be winners, that we could play basketball. He would run, shoot, pass, defend, guard. I mean, it wasn't a thing, but it was just that feeling. You know, Coach Pete Carroll of the Seahawks, I think I've told you this, one of his favorite quotes was, a strong leader pulls people to a deep belief in themselves. And that was reflected in his coaching, and that was reflected in my dad's coaching. And we actually, I think the only game that we won that year was the game that my dad coached. And it was just amazing, you know, and I just am grateful for that. The second thing I remember about my dad that I just offer to you and whatever is he would drive me to school early in the morning on the way to, I was a band geek in high school. I played the trombone, and so I had early morning band practice, and he would drive me in the car. And as he was driving, he would often say to me, James, follow your heart in life. You know, don't do what I did, which was graduate from Marquette University with a Bachelor of Science in Electrical Engineering and have a 42-year career at Boeing as an engineer. You know, do something that fulfills your heart. You know, and I remember as a high school student taking that to heart. So I entered the University of Washington on a 4-year Navy ROTC scholarship, was going to follow in my dad's footsteps, get an aeronautical engineering degree, fly planes in the Navy, and go on and just, you know, do great things. And God got a hold of my heart and said, you're going to be a minister. So much to my parents' chagrin at the time, and as a parent myself, I can understand that, I dropped my scholarship, changed my major to music, went on to seminary, and became a minister. And it was just, and as my life has continued to unfold, I've always come back to what is it that ignites my heart? What is it that impassions my heart? And so I hope that in these series of messages here today, as we talk about living love and uplifting lives, I'm making an assumption that living love and uplifting lives touches each of your hearts. that you wake up in the morning and think, wow, how can I make a difference in the world? Now, it may not look the same for you or the person next to you. You know, I think this is sometimes where churches can get a little off track because they can put people into this one-size-fits-all bucket and say, well, this is how we live love. We do this and this and this and this, and we don't do this and this and this and this. And it kind of takes some of the humanity and the individuality out of that love that we are. What I hope to do and what I've loved about getting to know Lisa as we've talked about creating sacred spaces is that everything that we do here can become a sacred space. And by sacred, a quality that's really important to me is safe. And by saying safe, I also think of it as brave, because sometimes love is not always, you know, rainbows and butterflies and daffodils and things. You know, there's a fierceness and an honesty and a truth, you know, to love that can be painful at times. But again, when it's held in love, when we come back to love, when we anchor and ground things in love, that's when growth, that's when transformation, that's when change happens. And what excites me about this community is, as I'm just getting to know Coeur d'Alene, is this community strikes me as just a one-of-a-kind community of people with a common heart, a common vision to express love, to be love in this community in new and refreshing and exciting ways. And so I just feel so honored to be a part of that and to learn from you how you've expressed love in this community, because it is very different than Seattle. but I just love it here. We spent yesterday up at Priest Lake, and have any of you ever been there? Oh my gosh, it's just like you drive there and you can just sort of feel the stress just melt away into the peace and the quietness and the beauty. We went swimming in the upper lake, and I've never gotten out of a lake and felt so clean before. But it was just amazing. So, but let me just, in the few moments that we have left, what I'd like to do is just offer you four things that you can do to help you navigate and find love in times of loss. And I've talked about some of these things before, so if it's worth saying once, it's worth saying again and again and again and again, so just know that about myself. But the first, let's see if I can do this here. Yeah, the first thing that you can do in finding love and loss is to offer love to grief. Offer love to grief. And what does it mean to offer love to grief? It means to allow space for grief to show up or not. There's no right way or wrong way to grieve. And as I've worked with people, especially in the loss of loved ones, sometimes people can struggle with saying, you know, I don't feel sad right now, and I should. And then this self-incrimination comes up, or the stories, you know, that we tell ourselves or whatever can come up. And you just need to know that there's no right way or wrong way to grieve. Oftentimes, too, with grief, judgment can come up. And I see this a lot, especially in the work that I do with men. You know, a lot of judgment around, oh, you're just a little boy crying, grow up and cry like a man, all this kind of stuff. And I just go, what in the world is this all about? You know, maybe some men were never allowed the space to grieve as little boys like their fathers. And a sacred space in a community can be the first time to touch into little boy tears of fear or whatever, and allow that grief to be there. But it's the judgment that we have. And again, it's not to pathologize that judgment or make it wrong. It's just to notice when it shows up. And can we be curious, open-minded, and non-judgmental about it? One of my favorite authors that I've been listening to and reading lately is James Finley, who wrote a book called The Healing Path. And he says that love protects us from nothing, but mysteriously sustains us in everything. When love touches suffering, it turns the suffering into mercy. And he was a man who grew up as the oldest son of a violently, physically, and emotionally abusive alcoholic father. All kinds of injustice and abuse, and as you can imagine what that would be like. And over the course of his years, he's learned that if he can allow himself to feel into the abyss, the black hole of suffering or the fear or whatever that's there, he can find a love that is just there to sustain and make things right. So wherever you're experiencing loss or processing loss in your life, offer that kind of love to it. Secondly, Welcome the seasons of grief. And I've substituted the word season from stages of grief. If you've been around grief work and done grief work, you've probably heard the five stages of grief. I don't like the word stages because it kind of implies that it goes in stages, you know, stage one, stage two, three, four, and five. And again, grief knows no such path. It's circular, it's organic, it comes and goes. You go in and out of these different seasons, but sometimes just being able to acknowledge what they are can be helpful. And so one season is denial. You know, this didn't happen. Second one is anger. There can be anger around loss. And my encouragement with anger is to realize that in many, many cases, anger rises in defense of something sacred. And if you find yourself angry at someone or something, being mindful to not hurt yourself or hurt others, can you learn from that anger what it is that is something important in you that it's protecting? It could be connection. It could be justice. It could be love, or, you know, or whatever. But learn to honor that anger safely and lovingly. Thirdly is bargaining. So we navigate through loss. Yeah, there's a bargaining. You know, this, that, and the other thing, why, or whatever. Depression, so much we can say about that. I think of depression as those dark nights of the soul, you know, that come in where we just experience that loneliness or sadness that comes from that. The last one is acceptance. We go through that place where, okay, we can accept things as they are. I really like Rumi's poem, The Guest House. Are any of you familiar with that one? You can Google it and look it up. But he talks about the range of emotions as human. And this human is like a guest house. And so as emotions come, learn to welcome them all with a smile, with a joy. Because, and I'm paraphrasing here, these emotions are sent as guides from beyond. They're here to serve. They're here to teach. So welcome the human experience with that. All right. Third, open your heart to new meaning. And this is something that is being talked about in grief work that's kind of new, is because it's, as we go through those five seasons, there's a sixth one, and that is finding meaning. What's the meaning of this loss? What can it be? And that meaning is really about the stories that we tell ourselves. When life is chaotic, when life is confusing, when life is disorienting or disillusioning, what does the mind want to do? It wants to make order out of it. And one of the ways that the mind makes order of it is by ascribing a meaning to it. But I really liked what author Robert Glover says about learn to be an observer, not a believer, of the stories that your mind tells. And that's been really helpful for me. Learn to understand what those stories are, but watch and see if you're believing those stories. And can you be open maybe to a new story that's wanting to be written? In all of the loss of my life, outside the loss of my mother died a year ago, almost a year ago, and then my father this year, there have been loss and many other things. And the meaning that has come to me through being in loving community with people is that sometimes God does for us what we're unable or unwilling to do for ourselves. That's not to say that God is punitive. That's not to say that God is retributive. But God is always in the business of, and Spirit is always in the business of, again, bringing us back to love and how it wants to express in our life. Lastly, number four, the last thing that you can do is practice courageous and compassionate loving presence. Courage, the word courage, is from the French cœur, heart, so from the heart, of or pertaining to the heart. Compassion is all about living with or being with the feeling or the experience. And then, what do you mean by loving presence? You know, huh? What is that? So what do you mean by loving presence? When I think of loving presence, I think of it in terms of ritual or religion. And again, religion is one of those words, I think like church, that some of us can have an allergic reaction to. But I think of religion, again, in its root meaning, the etymology of it. Re, again, ligion from the root ligio or ligament, which means to connect or bind. So what is it that for you, what ritual, what practice connects you again to the love that you feel inside for yourself? And so I've just listed a few of them here. It could be perhaps prayer. Meditation. how I distinguish the two. Prayer, I think of as usually us talking in some sort of way to spirit or divine or God, whatever you want to call it. Meditation, I think of as more as watching and listening, quieting and calming yourself and your mind to watch and notice what's going on. Journaling, being out in nature can help. Art in all of its forms, musical, visual, or whatever. Music. Something I've come to appreciate about Coeur d'Alene is this town loves music. Loves music. Yeah, Wednesday night we went to a concert out in the park, and I don't mean this offensively, but this town is religious about its music. There is a religion of music in this town that I mean in the greatest sense of the term, because what does it do? Brings the community together. There's laughing, there's connection, there's dancing, there's fun, there's good music. You know, it's a religion. And, you know, there may not be a preacher up talking about God and spirit, you know, but it's this practice of, again, coming back to love. And who doesn't love listening to good music, whatever style, whatever kind that it is? Just allow for that to be in your life. And don't let anyone tell you a right or a wrong way to do it. It's about what works for you. All right. One quote I just want to give you with here. Whatever it is, loss can have this quality of loss of power, loss of agency, loss of control. The word is surrender. And I came across a quote the other day. I forgot who said it, but I really liked it. And that it's this: as you're thinking about loss and dealing with it, that to surrender is not to give up. It's to show up. To show up authentically, genuinely, as yourself. Let me close with this poem that has meant a lot to me in these last few days, and I'll give it to you. It's the poem Clearing by Martha Postlethwaite. Do not try to save the whole world or do anything grandiose. Instead, create a clearing in the dense forests of your life and wait there patiently until the song that is your life falls into your own cupped hands, and you recognize and greet it. Only then will you know how to give yourself to this world so worthy of rescue. Amen. And so it is.
It is a flower.
far.